Good evening to you, and welcome to the show, History and You, with George Rodriguez Walling.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to History and You, the show where you decide what history becomes. I am your host, George Rodriguez Walling, and I'm very excited, very happy to be here with all of you this evening. If you want to call in, contribute your thoughts, please do so at toll-free 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Call me and tell me your views. If not, send me an email at historyandyou@yahoo.com. That's historyandyou@yahoo.com. You can also find me on the web at www.bbsradio.com/historyandyou. That's bbsradio.com/historyandyou. Please visit my website and leave me a blog in the fast chat or message me sections on the left side of the page. Tell me what's on your mind. I would also ask you to help me sustain the show by keeping it going on a weekly basis through your generous donations. There is a donate button on the webpage for you to easily contribute. Please be generous. Your contribution to the show is a very special help to me. Thank you, and I do look forward to reading your blog. Tonight's show is brought to you by the folks at FX Software and Sweet Pea Women's Apparel by Stacy Frotti. Tonight's topic, the promise of art is young. I once had the opportunity to ask a group of young people what art was, and all I got were conventions and stereotypes. Then I dared to try again by asking them to define or conceptualize love and justice. Well, this time I got silence and icy stares. I guess they were right. After all, who can really answer those questions anyways? But given the different perceptions it can bring, art, in everything it comes to represent for us, is special. It is the promise of a prayer within the beauty of a quiet moment to touch us, to reach us, to make us better than we were. Art, like love and justice and beauty, cannot be captured or harnessed, and perhaps it's better that way. In coming to understand that the essence of art is best left to be free, to come to us on its own terms. I wouldn't have it any other way. There is hope in the arts for most of us who forget about or take for granted certain things, and it's expressed in the promise it holds for young people who have been privileged to see, to hear, and to do things, very special artistic things that many of us cannot do. To quote William Fleming, in his book, Arts and Ideas, quote, "The arts, when considered in their natural, humanistic, and cultural context, can reveal the panorama of ever-changing human images and attitudes. As people and artists over the centuries express their conceptions of themselves, their social surroundings, and their place in the universal scheme of things, all join in the ceaseless quest to create significance for life. The ultimate objective is the understanding of self and society," unquote. And with an evolving effort at expressing ourselves through art, only then will the truth about us come closer to being revealed. As a source of inspiration for many in this life, young people have come to assimilate a deeper insight from the revelations of other artists from the present and times past. And as a gift, they give us back a reminder of the goodness in our lives through painting, music, and dance. Tonight is a night to talk about art. The art of painting the expression of our humanity. The art of singing the longing of our love for the life we share and celebrate with others in this world. And so, my first guest this evening is a lovely young lady whose artistry for painting and music came to be noticed very quickly by none other than her history teacher in school. Erin Keating, currently a sophomore at Gulliver Prep School in the South Florida area, is very passionate for the fields of both musical performance and visual art. She plans to pursue a career in the field of fine arts and also has ambitions for the field of psychology as well. One of her more recent renditions of interpreting art through history came from the initial movement of American progressivism in the beginning of the 20th century, when she was motivated to create a colorful collage of words that inspired her to compose a piece called Daily Corruption, from the thoughts and designs of the album artist Stanley Donwood. This collage and other pieces of her artwork can be seen on her website at www.society6.com/Erin Keating, E-R-I-N-K-E-A-T-I-N-G. That's www.society6.com/Erin Keating. Ladies and gentlemen, it's truly with much pleasure that I present to you this evening Miss Erin Keating. Erin, welcome to the show, History and You.
Good evening. Really happy to be here.
So, Erin, tell us how you stumbled into doing this latest piece based on American progressivism.
To me, I was very inspired by the corruptive capacity of consumerism and how it is still present in our society, even in modern day, and it's just parallel to what has happened in the progressive era and how consumerism can corrupt the individual into buying too much that than they can consume. And I was inspired by the works of Stanley Donwood, who is an album artist, and he's worked with a lot of bands in the early 2000s and the late 90s, and He constructed this piece for a cover, and it was constructed by driving through town shortly after 9/11 in 2003, and he wrote down all these little scribbles of words that he saw in advertisements and on the news headlines, and he constructed a piece, and they're made of basic colors and very basic phrases or just words. And it really goes to show how society is just driving through town. You see so much advertisement and so much distraction from natural life that it just becomes so disillusioning.
Erin, have things really changed all that much? I mean, ever since from that period of American progressivism to what Stanley Donwood inspired you to do, have things really changed all that much?
Well, certain, of course, the planet is dynamic and ever-changing, and humanity never ceases to change throughout the ages, but human nature is really just static. It doesn't move. We are all the same. We all have the same mentality as we had in past generations, except with the advances of modern society, I guess, you can consider humanity to be progressing slightly, but we still have the same nature. It's the difference between nature and the environment you're put in.
Right. Erin, it's somewhat interesting to see the overlap of the area of art along with history in relation to the American progressive movement. What role did your teacher have in this project that you did, or how did you stumble across the moment or the opportunity to link the area of art with the area of history in relation to the progressive movement?
Well, my teacher gave us an assignment, and he said that we should incorporate any talent whatsoever, whether it be in academics, whether it be in art, music, theater, painting, dance. It could be anything, and it has to pertain to Chapter 22, the spirit of progressivism. And I was reading through the chapter and trying to think of what should I do, and should I incorporate it with music, should I do a presentation, and I came across the idea of just how the titles and subtitles of the textbook itself had so many words that just jumped out at you. So I circled all of these words, and I put them, started sketching out a canvas instantly the minute I got home, and
right.
I put all these
yeah.
words that I
And then
I
one thing,
observed.
Of course, led to the other, I can imagine. You know, I've seen your website, Aaron. It's really wonderful. You really do have some wonderful pieces there. I would encourage everyone, by the way, to visit your website and see the fantastic artwork that you do. And it's interesting because in my introduction of you, I also mentioned that you have ambitions to study psychology. And clearly I see psychological components in your artwork. And it's interesting how you were able to combine art and history in what you just explained to now combining art and psychology in relation to the humanity that you are trying to bring out in your artwork. It's very, very interesting. The combination is very compelling for everyone to see. But let me ask you very quickly something else about daily corruption. Interesting how you came up with that. Such an interesting arrangement of words and themes involved in daily corruption, as with colors and the placement of words, all showing the angst of the times past, as with our times today. Why the title, Daily Corruption?
The title was inspired by the phrase, the Daily Mail, how everyone gets the Daily Mail, and it's just a common term. And I was thinking that just through all these titles in my textbooks, they look very similar to, per se, a newspaper and how it has so many advertisements, and it's always a current drama or a current conflict happening, and it's just always an endless struggle. And they just keep broadcasting and broadcasting. It's a just an endless cycle. So I produced the title, The Daily Corruption, as in place of the word mail.
Sure. It makes sense. Was there a particular preference of color or word that you gave more attention to?
There were more attention put into nouns, and as well as slight adjectives and symbols that are commonly seen.
Okay, Aaron, I was going to ask you another question about your piece, Daily Corruption. What psychology do you see in that piece?
I see a lot of anxiety in this piece because it really represents the angst experienced throughout that era and just the disillusionment of capitalists and consumerism in society and how it really affects the individual to just becoming a mess of corruption and always focusing on the question, how much is enough, is what I was thinking when I was doing this piece, how we have no perception of how much is enough, really, that we're always buying more things. And in the past, it was commonly accepted that if something were to break or if you had a hole in your sock, you would sew it up. But in today's society, we would just buy a new sock. And it's becoming even more highlighted and elevated in today's society where we just buy things, even sometimes to soothe our anxiety or to soothe our depression. Sometimes people feel relaxed by going shopping or just driving through town or watching the news even. And they have no idea how psychologically corrupting it is and how it can make them so uptight.
Yeah. Is there any one particular word that you, I think, really might have focused on more than any other words there in that piece? Is there one choice of word that really made you be riveted to that?
The one word I would say is, even though it's not in the center of the piece and it's more towards the bottom left, is the word consume.
Yeah.
And not consumerism or consuming, it's almost feels as a command, like consume, just the word itself.
Yeah.
It poses some sort of command and imposition, and saying that it's almost like a law that we need to consume and we need to keep buying more and more, and this is what the media keeps telling us. And that was mainly the inspiration of the whole piece, is how we just keep buying more and more. And other words there are featured are buy and fear.
Right, right.
And machines.
Erin, I noticed that in your piece, many of the words on the right side of the canvas are turning over as if to fall off. Why is that?
Some of the words weren't intended on being read, just because a lot of times we can't take it in all at once because it's so overwhelming, because the media and everything is just, it just keeps attacking us with commercials, and sometimes we can't even recollect what we're watching. And they're falling off the page because it's representing how humanity is hanging off of a cliff.
Right.
And we're just falling we're succumbing to the media and just becoming basically robots.
Yeah. Erin, as an artist, when you first approach the canvas, what do you see? Or let me reverse the essence of the question. What do you not see? Meaning, what do you block out?
What I see primarily is, even just by looking at a canvas, sometimes just blinking, or just by the blink of an eye, sometimes I see a piece and it just comes to my mind in the snap of a finger. It's just so instantaneous, and I always think to write it down. Other times, I really have to think about what I'm going to paint and what I'm going to exert onto the paintbrush, to the canvas. But a white canvas really is empowering, and just staring at it, it's just to look at something and visualize how many endless possibilities that will end up significant to somebody and will touch the minds of so many people. It really is truly empowering, and a blank canvas can sometimes even be intimidating.
Yeah.
There are so many possibilities.
One of the artists that influenced me considerably when I was younger was Jackson Pollock. Jackson Pollock, his work was altogether unique. And yet, I'm always left pensive and interested and very curious to see what motivates artists. Jackson Pollock, for one, would see things that nobody else would see on a canvas as he just toyed with swirls of paint. You sit there and look at a canvas and it becomes more and more empowering to you, as if an image just wants to get out of its own prison and reveal itself to you. And I'm always left very curious as to what the artist sees that many of us do not. We do not see what you see, which I find compelling in and of itself. Did you have a particular reason why words are in certain colors in relation to your piece, by the way?
Most of the colors and the color choices for the words, most of them were unintentional. But there were a few that I preserved and I painted beforehand so that it wouldn't interfere with any of the other colors. Like a lot of the very,
so in other words, so it's sort of like a colorful a color balance?
Definitely. The first word I painted, I have to say, is in the upper left corner, is progress. And it was red because a lot of the words in red are perceived as consumerist words and advertising words and very, very materialistic,
right,
while the white, blue, and black words are either governmental, political, social, and they have more essence to them.
Erin, you know what the many colors tell you, how do you think the many colors are going to be perceived by your audience?
I think the first word that I see when I stare at this piece, it might be different for another person. The first word I actually see is bi and industrialism. And it was, those were placed in directly in the center or directly in on top of the piece for a reason, for the people, my audience, to really get a sense of what the piece is trying to convey rather than other frivolous words like dollars and cents and supply and surplus and the millions of dollar signs. But I think that warm colors and the use of the basic colors really have an impact on my audience and how those words appear to be screaming at them more than the other ones, because cool colors recede and warm colors tend to stand out more.
Well, as a matter of fact, what you have in the middle of the piece, more or less just below the red percentage sign in a green backdrop, you have the words work, pay, time, why, followed by a dollar sign, which I think in just four words, it tells such a long and controversial story about why people might become disillusioned with capitalism, knowing that it went through its period of exploitation.
Definitely. And those words, I have to say, those were not intended on occurring in that sequence. Like, a lot of these words, the way that they appear on the page seems very most at random. But once you really look at those words that I put in the center, wow, I never really realized that they could really engulf the entire theme of the piece.
Yeah, and that's exactly why the reason why I'm saying, how do you think many people are going to perceive what you put on the canvas? Aaron, let's talk about music for just a moment, because we're running out of time. We're cutting here a little bit short. I know you perform with the school orchestra, and I also learned that you recently played in the Christmas concert. What instrument do you play?
I play the flute, and I have played clarinet for 6 years, and I just started on the flute, and I've been playing that in band.
Is there any particular attraction to the flute?
I just think that the flute has such a delicate tonality to it, and that it is a lot easier to play rather than clarinet, and I do feel it has a sense of elegance to the flute.
Yes.
Rather than a reeded instrument.
Yes, it does. It does. I want to ask you a question that I think is really going to make you think, hopefully, what kind of music, or what kind of song, or what kind of sound or instrument do you think would best reflect daily corruption? What music, song, sound, or instrument do you think would best reflect daily corruption?
I would have to say that of a trumpet.
Wow.
Or a very loud
okay.
guitar.
Yeah, and I can understand where you're coming from. Go ahead.
Because trumpets have a very loud, crass, brassy sound, and they just sound, they can sound serene, but a lot of the times when they're played at a very high, with very good breath control, it sounds very imperative.
Yeah, that's true. Aaron, if there would be one piece of advice that you could give to others out there wishing to do what you do, what would you say to them?
I would have to say that, what is stopping you? Because I get this from a lot of people, that a lot of comments from my work and the work of many others and my friends who are also artists, and they say, wow, you're such an amazing artist. I love your work. I wish I could do something like that. And what my friend said once is, he said, what is stopping you from doing stuff like that? Because everybody has artistic potential in them. Everybody has the potential to become an artist or a musician or a dancer or anything. And I feel that if people tried harder to follow their passions, that they would be able to attain the status of an artist in their own head.
Well
said. It might not be the best art, and it might be amazing, but whatever is put forth with an intention and a purpose, I would consider to be art.
Well said. Well stated. Aaron, thank you so much for sharing your time on the show, and I wish for you much success in your life. You are very, very talented. So go out and do good with the talent that God gave you. And everyone, please don't forget to visit her website. It is a well worth endeavor, a well invested moment to go into www.society6.com/Erin Keating, E-R-I-N-K-E-A-T-I-N-G. It's a wonderful website. Erin, thanks again for your time, and I do wish you much success.
Thank you.
My next guest is another lovely young lady whose talent for musical vocals is nothing less than impressive for the things that she's accomplished at such a young age. You'll meet her next. But first, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back to discuss The Promise of Art is Young on History and You.
Just to break it down. We build it up just to break it down.
In a world dominated by frameworks, platforms, and tools, it's difficult to know how to win when the only certainty is change. At Software FX, customer service and highly useful products are our main goals. Over 20 years of experience, coupled with ideas and inspiration from more than 150,000 developers all over the world, have turned into business intelligence tools that provide more choice, convenience, and value to our customers and partners. Yes, technologies do change, but Software FX has your back. That's Software FX, data visualization for every need, every platform. Call us today, toll free, at 1-800-392-4278. That's 1-800-392-4278. Be the master of your data. Software FX. Sweet Pea by Stacey Frotte is a woman's contemporary clothing line and nationally recognized brand. Sweet Pea is an innovative collection that pairs flirtiness with sensibility. Our Sweet Pea woman can be running a board meeting, watching a soccer game, or dining out with friends. Sweet Pea is recognized to be eye-catching and edgy. We empower our loyal worldwide customer base by creating clothing that fits their lifestyle. She is on the move and believes that Sweet Pea is her go-to on almost all occasions. Day into night, Sweet Pea's stylish blouses move with you and your busy day. Bloomingdale's, Nordstrom's, Anthropologie, and the Sweet Pea by Stacey Frotte website feature new Sweet Pea designs weekly. We have been creating beautiful clothing for 16 years, and there is no sign of us slowing down. Fashion is cyclical, it is true, but style is a constant. Please visit www.sweetpeabystaceyfrotte.com today.
Okay, and we are back discussing the topic for this evening's show, The Promise of Art is Young, on History and You. Daniela Rodriguez Firmani, a talent whose name would behoove you to remember well, is currently a senior in high school and is also part of the International Baccalaureate program there at Gulliver Preparatory School in the South Florida area. She has been appointed as the president of Gulliver's Vocal Ensemble and Chamber Choir for the past 3 years under the direction of Mr. Ron Castingway. In addition, Daniela has been chosen to perform as a soprano in the Florida Vocal Association's All-State Mixed Choir for 3 consecutive years, and 2 years performing in the Florida Vocal Association's Sight Reading Choir in Tampa, Florida.
Outside of school, she studies classical piano with Miss Margarita Garcia and vocal performance with Miss Sheila Barish. In July of this year, Danielia joined the Miami Lyric Opera Company as a soprano, where she has performed in operas such as Cavalleria Rusticana and Suor Angelica. Daniela also has many other interests that she wishes to pursue, if only she had the time. I believe she will. Ladies and gentlemen, it is with great pleasure that I present to you Miss Daniela Rodriguez Fermani. Danny, welcome to the show, History and You.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. Now, Danny, when did you know that you wanted to sing?
Well, I think it was my freshman year. Actually, my mom had always begged me to join the chorus because she thought it was pretty. And I joined fifth grade, so fifth through eighth was miserable. I did not like the chorus. But then ninth grade, I had the opportunity to study with my now vocal teacher, Sheila Barish, and she introduced the world of singing in a whole different light. And I love her philosophy, her approach to singing, and I really just fed off of that, and I am where I am today because of her.
Oh, wonderful. Was it something in the sound of your voice in ninth grade that told you, hey, you know what? I think I like this. I think I like the sound that I'm emitting out of my mouth. I think that it can take me somewhere, or it just sounds like fun for now.
Well, I never really liked my voice in like ninth grade. I think as the years progress, it takes a sort of education of the voice to get to a certain level. And I think about 10th
grade, I
started...
What do you mean by education of the voice?
Oh, education.
Oh, okay.
You have to educate your voice, do a lot of stress release. And I think about 10th grade, I finally started to sound more mature.
Yeah. Tell us a very obvious question probably asked of you, very common. How hard is it to sing?
Okay. Well, I mean, personally, I think anyone can sing. Maybe not sing well, but people can sing. But I think it all has to do with educating your voice, having the right teacher.
But, you know, there's some people that have such extraordinary skill that they can stand there and just emit sound, emit song, emit melodies, and it looks effortless. It really does. Like, they're not – and others – I mean, you're afraid they're going to pop some kind of an artery or vein or something as they pop out of their necks. So, you know, it may leave people wondering, well, is this hard or is it not hard?
I think the best artist is the one that makes it look easy. The one that just makes it seem so effortless. The one
would you say that's because of talent or would you say that's because of skill?
I think that's because of skill. It takes a lot of skill to make it look like what you're doing, something so beautiful, takes no effort at all.
Danny, how do you breathe when you sing long or loud notes?
It all has to do with breathing from the diaphragm. So make sure your shoulders are down. You can't lift your shoulders. And breathing from the diaphragm, really. That's what I've always been taught from since I joined the chorus in the fifth grade.
So it sort of sounds like the way babies breathe, right from the diaphragm.
Yeah, it actually, babies are like instinctively breathe in a way that fills their lungs more. It's as we grow that we only start to fill our lungs half of what they actually can take. When we breathe, when we sleep, is also when we fill our lungs the most. So we have to replicate as singers how the breathing as we like how we sleep. filling our lungs to their total capacity.
Well, you know, you touched upon something that I also wanted to ask you about, and that's sleep. Because I've heard from time to time that sleeping, and when I say sleeping, I'm talking about sleeping of a type where you actually get to rest, REM sleep, in other words, rapid eye movement sleep.
Right.
When you get several hours of REM sleep, I understand, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that it has an effect on really relaxing your vocal cords, almost as if it were vocal cords beginning to talk and perform, emitting sounds after a massage. Would that be correct, or is that somewhat mythical, or what?
It's totally correct. The most important things that I've been taught is sleep, eat, and hydrate for a vocalist. And sleeping is the one that is the most important of those three. It's important before a concert, before any major event vocally, to have a good amount of sleep, because it relaxes the vocal cords especially. And I've even noticed that when I get enough sleep, I feel more vocally prepared for my performances.
Danny, is there a difference between singing with skill and singing to interpret a melody, interpret lyrics? For example, Plácido Domingo, which I know everybody knows or has heard of, or to some extent, and Pavarotti. Many would say that Pavarotti would seem effortless at singing, that he would stand there and do the most amazing things with his voice, born from pure skill to learn. Not that he didn't interpret, but he made it more obvious the skill that he had to sing the way he did. Plácido Domingo, on the other hand, was one that perhaps might have been known more for turning of a phrase and how he interpreted the melody in relation to a particular lyric at one particular point in the song. Which to you is more important for the performance, for reaching people musically?
I think interpreting the song would be more important, especially if you're trying, because all music really is vocally is trying to inhabit a character and trying to portray a message to the audience. Whenever I sing a song, I do it in a way that I am the character. I am literally the person that I'm trying to talk to somebody, and I need to get to the audience. I need to get that message across that I have something to say. So
yeah,
in a way, it's like speaking to the audience. It's more about how you interpret the song than really the skill or the master. Obviously, I mean, these singers have incredible skill, but it's more about the message that you convey to the audience through the interpretation that you do
right.
The piece.
And within that interpretation, Danny, can one sing better with an emotional memory in mind? For example, a romance gone right, a romance gone wrong, or any other kind of emotion that might incite that much more oomph in the tonality that you're emphasizing through a melody?
Definitely. Whenever I'm singing a song, or my voice teacher always tells me, try to think of this when you're singing this. If it's a sad song, try to think of something sad. And it's incredible how that emotion that I have towards that memory is really conveyed in the song. It's really incredible.
So it's really amazing how even singing in that context that you just described is almost singing vicariously, or singing with a certain flair to the theatrics almost. It's almost like you're performing something for someone.
Right, exactly.
Danny, what is a vibrato and how valuable is it?
Well, in the chorus, the vibrato is like a freeing the voice and letting it naturally vibrate, vibrato. It's more appropriate solo singing because in chorus, everyone has to have the same tonality of the pitch, so nobody can have vibrato or then it'll disrupt the total effect of the song. But
well, because sometimes... go ahead.
In solo singing, it's more appropriate because you're by yourself and there's more freedom to it.
Because vibratos sometimes are so rapid and so fast that, you know, sometimes it sounds a little bit tasteless toward certain people. Much more desirable is a softer, more slower paced vibrato. Of course, that would depend on the song as well. But are rapid vibratos also appealing?
I think, personally, I love rapid vibratos. They kind of sound like a bird, just very delicate. And I think that as people age, it gets a little more deeper and a little bit more heavy, the vibrato. But I think keeping a very light vibrato, kind of like a bird, very delicate, is very beautiful.
Yeah. Danny, what do you do to prepare for a performance mentally and physically?
Over the years, I think I've gotten accustomed to performing in front of large audiences. But it's really been a long process to become accustomed to performing in front of people. I remember in fifth grade, I could never, ever sing in front of anybody, and now I'm singing in front of so many people. So I think mentally, I've started to think, like, it's okay if somebody doesn't like how I sing. It's just a way of expression for me. I don't need other people's approval. I just want to sing because I love to do it.
Yeah, it almost comes to being like, you know, there's so much to worry about, so much to get nervous about, so much to be conscious of, that, you know what, I just don't have any control over any of those things, so I am just going to bring myself into myself and sing out. You know, that's the kind of thing that I've always seen people almost do physically, like they just give up the fight of worrying about everything and not be able to control much of anything.
Because we can't. We really have no control of what people's tastes are. We just, as vocalists, we just do it because we love it, and that's what we've been trained to do.
Exactly. What's your favorite music to sing, Danny?
Oh, definitely opera. Anything by Puccini.
Madame Butterfly, perhaps?
I'm sorry?
Madame Butterfly, perhaps?
Oh, yeah. That's not for my voice yet. I think when I'm older, I'll be able to sing that. But
okay.
Yeah.
Danny, do you find yourself having fun when you sing, or do you remain, you know, within that context of formality for a particular piece?
Oh, I have so much fun when I sing.
Oh, good for you. Oh,
especially
wow.
Especially when I hit those high notes.
You're lucky because you can do so many of these things that people wish they can do and they can't. But you do have fun. You feel the fun as you feel confident in singing, right?
Yeah, I think I definitely feel confident in singing. Yeah. Especially opera, something that is not so common in people my age. So whenever I sing in front of people, like I hit that first high note, people's faces just light up, and it's just so funny to see their reaction.
Yeah. Danny, have you noticed that your voice, as you sing more and more and you get older and move more into that musical area, does your voice change in texture for each performance that you do?
I don't think so. My vocal teacher has really trained me to maintain a sort of same pitch, same tonality, because it is really unique for me. I'm not going to change my voice for a song or alter it in any way. I'm just going to keep it the same texture. But
Yeah, go ahead.
I just think that it really hasn't changed. Maybe I'll see it in the future when I get older, but I really haven't really seen a
Well, the reason I'm asking, Danny, is because what happens sometimes is that when singers start off singing, before they formally come into their own, they tend to emulate other singers. And in emulating other singers, they tend to even subconsciously adopt some of someone else's singing style. And I'm wondering if that can also affect the texture of your voice that you put out for each performance. But you're saying that you're definitely trained in not letting that happen to you, that you do want a consistency in your voice, right?
Exactly. Obviously, I'm never going to be, I don't know, but right now I'm not going to be able to sing like Maria Callas, for example, and I'm not going to stress my voice and alter my voice to fit hers. The roles that she played, I might not be able to play because my voice just doesn't suit that particular song.
Now, Danny,
I just need to find the pieces that are right for me.
I know that you play piano also. What do you enjoy doing more, playing piano or singing?
I think singing. I've been playing piano, though, for about, I started at 4, so that's about 13 years now. But I think singing is so much more fun. But, I mean, both are just so incredible, really. It's really amazing what music can do. But
Danny, yeah, go ahead.
I think vocally, yeah, I think singing is a lot more exciting, especially I think since it has lyrics, there's more of a message getting across. I mean, not to say that piano doesn't have a message getting across, just there's a character behind the singer. So I think it makes it more interesting.
Yeah. Danny, we're running out of time here quickly, but I just wanted to ask you one or two more things, which I think are really important for me to listen to what you have to say about these. Looking back over the years, the recent years, Danny, what has Gulliver given you?
Oh, gosh. I think it's given me opportunities, definitely, because not only have I been able to excel in music, I've been able to do everything else, like languages, biology, which I've also grown. I've also started to love. So it's definitely giving me an opportunity to just explore everything, not only music, but also biology, sciences, everything.
Good for you.
And it's done it in a way that is so accepting. Like, the music program is one of the, it's a second family, really. Everyone is so accepting. Everyone is incredibly nice. We all have funny music jokes that people don't understand, but we do. It's just really nice.
Good for you. Good for you. And it requires an intelligent student to know how to take advantage of all of these benefits as well. And Danny, one final thing. If there would be one piece of advice that you could give to others out there wishing to do what you do so well, what would you say to them?
I would tell them, stop wondering, why can't I do this? And start actually doing it. I know so many people that have told me, "Oh, wow, Daniela, you're so good. I wish I would have kept playing piano. I wish I would have kept singing, but I just didn't have the time." Well, I think if you love something so much, I think you should make the time for it. And I know people that have now regretted not making time for it. So I think that it's important. I would tell people to just stop wondering what if and start doing it, pretty much.
Good for you. Good for you. Thank you, Danny. Thank you so very much for sharing your
time. Thank you for having me.
On the show tonight, and I wish you much, much success in your life. You are a very, very talented young lady. Thank you for sharing your time on the show this evening.
Thank you so much. Good night.
So, ladies and gentlemen, what have Aaron and Daniela given us this evening? Well, let's think about that for a moment. I think Aaron and Daniela have given us a moment to stop and to not pay attention to time, because it doesn't matter. For they have reminded us through what they do that the hope of all art lies in the promise to always enchant. It is nestled within a young heart to charm and to make us remember along the way the beauty of being young, if only for a while. Thank you, ladies, for letting us remember what we so often forget, that the promise of art is indeed found in the happiness of a young heart. And now, that's all the time we have. We've now come to that final part of our show where I wish to leave you with a final thought to consider and to further reflect regarding the signs of our times. Some final thoughts. The promise of art is young because it ages in time without getting old, because it doesn't bore, because it breathes hope again to those who have lost it, and because it remains as one of the last remnants that's pure and without guile. It is, for lack of a better phrase, the truth of our soul that speaks of the world in wonder, in angst, and in prayer. These two young girls, like so many other young artists, bring us the gift of a memory sometimes lost to the anguish and labor of life. And we remain grateful for the chance to feel, to see, and to think outside of ourselves about ourselves. Join me again next Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time for another hour of insight by visiting my website at www.bbsradio.com/historyandyou. In your blog, please leave me something to think about. As always, I want to thank the folks at BBS Radio, my promoter and producers, Deborah, Doug, and Don, for making this show possible and for all of the things you guys do to bring the show to our audience every week. Also, please remember to generously donate a contribution to our show. Your financial participation is a very valuable help for me. Thank you in advance. As your host for this evening's show, this is George Rodriguez Walling wishing all of you a very pleasant evening. Good night.